From South Carolina Public Radio, this is the South Carolina Lead. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on May 3rd, 2024, from South Carolina Public Radio Studios here in Columbia. May the 4th be with you.
Sorry.
We're in the same studio. On this episode of The Lead, we have updates from the final days of the legislative session looking at a bill that prohibits gender-affirming care for transgender students. We have the latest development on the state's six-week abortion law. Congressman Jim Clyburn receives the Presidential Medal of Freedom. And Victoria Hansen has a report on the 1st Congressional District Democratic primary. The ad wars are heating up in the 4th Congressional District primary. And Mayon Schechter has a profile on one of the state's top reporters. It's not about me. Now, The Lead loves hearing from everybody. That's why we have a voicemail box set up at 803-563-7169. We love your hot takes, your questions, your compliments, sometimes your critiques. Also, we are soliciting you.
What do you want from me?
Yes, we are soliciting you legally to give us some input for A.T. Shire, because he's a proud papa now. We want some parenting advice. I could probably use some parenting advice for myself. Let us know, 803-563-7169. And thank you. Goo goo gaga, baby. There is one legislative week left in session.
One.
Which means when the clock strikes 5 p.m. on Thursday, all bills that aren't on their way to the governor or in a conference committee, which means they've passed both chambers but need some differences ironed out to make it to the governor, well, those bills are dead. They turn into pumpkins at 5 o'clock and will have to be reintroduced next year and go through the committee process all over again, just like losing a glass slipper at a ball you weren't invited to. But these bills, well, they don't have fairy godmothers. That's why Signy Die Week at the end of the two-year session gets a little loco, which means crazy.
Wow.
Spanish. Unlike last year when bills that didn't go anywhere were still alive come January, well, that's not the case here. But if a bill that's passed one chamber like the Senate isn't already on the House's calendar by now, well, we're sorry for your loss. And even if one is on the Senate calendar, it's probably blocked and is dead or has been dead for a while, like the hate crimes bill, because politics. In fact, the last big debate of this session likely took place this week in the Senate, where Republican lawmakers put on special order a House-approved bill that would prohibit gender-affirming care for minors. This includes performing gender transition surgeries, prescribing puberty blockers, and overseeing hormone treatments for patients under 18. Now, a note, gender transition surgeries for minors have never taken place in South Carolina, and hormone treatments and puberty blockers have only been prescribed after extensive medical consultation. This according to testimony from medical professionals. In this bill, school principals or vice principals would also have to notify parents or guardians if a child wanted to use a name other than their legal one, or a nickname or pronouns that did not match their sex assigned at birth, something that opponents of the bill said would lead to dangerous situations for children who face abuse at home. Freshman Senator Tamika Isaac Devine, a Democrat from Columbia, took to the well at one point during Thursday's debate to speak to a religious and parental rights double standard that she says Republicans have employed on this matter. Devine, who is a lawyer and has worked child welfare cases and worked with children in mental health crisis, also spoke about the realities that she has dealt with and seen.
We are ignoring that if you are talking about treating something and providing care, it is not about one thing. It is comprehensive. If one part of this treatment is outlawed, you are handicapping medical professionals so that they cannot provide the standard of care that medical professionals have deemed appropriate and been able to then talk with parents and their children about what is right for their situation. We're ignoring all credible medical experts. Anybody can get up here and say, I've seen this survey from 2021. I've heard this data. I've heard that. But the reality is, when you look at all credible medical experts, the AMA, the American Pediatric Association, the American Association of Mental Health Professionals, they all agree that this is the standard of care, and this treatment not only should be allowed, but it is necessary and it is life-saving. And again, what we're saying is we are telling parents that they don't know best. The baby that woman carried for 9 months, gave birth to, and has watched grow for 13 years, we're going to tell her that we know better what's for her child than she does. How do we do that? But you want to say that a parent should have a right to choose a library book, but a parent doesn't have a right to say what's best for their child when it comes to their treatment, medical care and treatment? When people try and tell somebody that I'm a better Christian than you because I am making sure that our children are not harmed by their parents who love them, then I am here to tell you that no one in this Senate chamber has a stronger faith than I do. No one understands God's greatness as much as I do. But I'm going to tell you one thing. The God that I serve does not judge. He does not allow me to judge other people. I'm not going to sit back and judge families who are going through a scenario that I don't know about. I'm going to be compassionate. I'm going to be empathetic. And I'm going to try and learn and understand. That's what my God teaches me. He teaches me to be a good person to everyone. No matter if you don't understand the lifestyle, if it's different from you, but that we love everyone. This bill isn't showing love. It's not showing compassion. It is actually malicious and is showing that we are not caring for all citizens here in South Carolina.
The bill came to a vote after several other senators spoke, and Democrats attempted to throw off a quorum in the chamber, despite there being 30 Republicans and 15 Democrats plus one independent. And nevertheless, a quorum was present Thursday evening, and the amended bill passed 28-8, with Williamsburg Democratic Senator Kevin Johnson joining Republicans. After the vote, Senate Medical Affairs Committee Chairman Danny Verdin told Myon Schechter this was one of the biggest issues that his constituents have expressed concern over.
We respond to our constituencies. And for this matter, if you put it out there in a polling question, which is how many times we find out what the constituents are interested in, if you put it alongside taxes, if you put it alongside restructuring, if you put it alongside paying our school teachers and paying our law enforcement officers, this is up there. It's above them all. And in that regard, I would say, even though it has an accentuated polling presence for Republican senators, the fact that we're dealing with it late has actually been to the consternation of a lot of our constituents. So, and a lot of us have been signaling and messaging to our constituents, we'll get it, we'll get there. We're working through the maze, the legislative process, and just the tremendous workload that's here before us, but we'll get there.
Sticking in Columbia, on Thursday, a Richland County Circuit Court judge heard arguments in a suit looking to define a fetal heartbeat, which is at the center of the state's current 6-week abortion law that took effect last August. The suit was brought by Planned Parenthood South Atlantic, Dr. Catherine Ferris, and Taylor Shelton, who says the definition of a fetal heartbeat was left unclear in the South Carolina Supreme Court's decision finding that the ban was constitutional. Jeffrey Collins with the Associated Press writes that the state contends fetal heartbeat is the moment when an ultrasound detects cardiac activity, which is usually around 6 weeks after conception. But the law also mentions when the major parts of the heart come together and, quote, repetitive rhythmic contraction, quote, begins, which is often around 9 weeks. Lawyers for the state are turning Planned Parenthood's argument on its head by arguing that the organization said over 300 times that the law bans abortions after 6 weeks, during a successful challenge that caused the General Assembly to alter the law and led to the second unsuccessful challenge. They said the group changed its thoughts only after losing the second time. Now, following the hearing, the Russ McKinney was outside the courtroom where folks with Planned Parenthood held a press conference, which included Taylor Shelton, who had to travel to North Carolina for an abortion last year since South Carolina's law prevented her from getting one in-state. Here's part of her story.
My journey to getting an abortion under South Carolina's early abortion ban was not just difficult. It was a harrowing ordeal that exposed the deep flaws in this legislation. When I discovered I was pregnant last year, I was blindsided. Despite taking every precaution, I found myself 4 weeks into an unplanned pregnancy. I immediately called an abortion provider, only to be confronted by the cruel reality of our state's abortion ban. Because South Carolina's law is unclear about exactly when abortion is banned, providers had to assume a ban at the earliest possible time. So even though I used contraception and tested as early as I could and called as quickly as I could, there still wasn't enough time for me to get an abortion, and it is not enough time for the vast majority of South Carolinians. I was one of the fortunate ones who had the means to travel to North Carolina for the care I needed, but even there, I encountered countless barriers and coercion disguised as counseling. What should have been a straightforward process close to home instead turned into a grueling odyssey, draining me emotionally, physically, and financially. I spent more than 20 hours in my car traveling back and forth between South Carolina and North Carolina three different times just to access essential health care. And every trip I was forced to make worsened the toll on my well-being, amplifying the stress and uncertainty of an already burdensome situation. But my story is not unique. It echoes the experiences of thousands of people across South Carolina who are denied access to essential health care. The lack of clarity in this law leaves people like me scrambling to navigate a convoluted system that fails to prioritize our well-being and autonomy.
Planned Parenthood is pushing for the fetal heartbeat to be defined at 9 weeks, which is the earliest a heartbeat could possibly be detected. And again, the text of the law only says when a heartbeat can be detected, and let's not forget that a fetus's heart isn't even fully developed until 17 weeks. Now, of course, we didn't really have abortions in South Carolina after 14 weeks, but Planned Parenthood states that in the first 5 months of this new law, 3/4 of women seeking abortions were turned away because their pregnancies were too far along. And 86% of those 3/4 could have had the procedure if the law allowed abortions up to 9 weeks, which included Shelton. Jetting up to Washington, Congressman Jim Clyburn was one of 19 recipients of the Presidential Medal of Freedom on Friday from President Joe Biden. The Presidential Medal of Freedom is the highest civilian honor presented to individuals who have made exemplary contributions to the prosperity, values, or security of the United States, world peace, or other significant societal, public, or private endeavors. Clyburn, whose endorsement at the behest of his late wife Emily in the 2020 South Carolina Democratic presidential primary, helped turn around Biden's campaign and propel him into the White House. And Clyburn has served the 6th congressional district since 1993 and is running again this fall. Clyburn has also served as Majority Whip and Assistant Democratic Leader. He is also a national campaign co-chair on Biden's re-election campaign. Sticking with Congress, let's look at one of the congressional primaries that will be taking place on June 11th.
Okay, let's go.
On Tuesday's pod, we heard from the two Republicans duking it out in the upstate's 4th congressional district between incumbent William Timmons and State Representative Adam Morgan. But let's now head down I-26 to the 1st congressional district.
Okay.
Where Republican Nancy Mace has represented the district since flipping it back in 2020. Since then, it's also been redistricted based on population growth, and district lines have been drawn to ensure a stronger Republican district. This redistricting has been challenged in the courts, and the case is still awaiting a decision by the U.S. Supreme Court. Ever heard of it?
Yes.
But we're not looking at the Republicans in this race. Actually, the two Democrats that are looking to get the nomination come June 11th so they can challenge the Republican. South Carolina Public Radio's Victoria Hansen has this report.
At the corner of Meeting and Broad, just behind Charleston City Hall, tourists gather for walking tours in Washington Square Park. It's here guides share stories about Black Civil War hero Robert Smalls, who escaped slavery by commandeering a Confederate ship. And it's here Smalls' great-great-grandson takes a seat on a park bench, eager to talk about his Democratic primary bid for Congress.
And for me, what makes this particular race exceptionally special is that I'm running for the same seat that my great-great-grandfather Robert Small served in back during Reconstruction. So,
Michael Moore wants to represent what is now South Carolina's 1st congressional district, as his famous ancestor did 150 years ago. The 61-year-old says he's motivated by not only the legacy of his great-great-grandfather, but the future of his children.
You know, thinking about my kids and my grandchild, I have real concern about the world that my generation is leaving theirs.
Moore says he's concerned about climate change, affordable health care, women's rights, especially as they're denied abortions, and public schools. His renowned relative, Robert Smalls, founded public schools in South Carolina through legislation.
We've got to stop with these political foolishness around where we're banning books and we're preventing certain topics. We need to let the teachers do their jobs.
The longtime businessman who served as the first president of Charleston's International African American Museum says he's also concerned about the Coastal District's current Republican representative, Nancy Mace.
You know, a lot of the stunts and things that she's been involved in have seemed like maybe she's either positioning herself for what she believes would be a future Trump administration or maybe trying to get a gig on Fox News. Who knows?
But before Moore can take on Mace, he must first defeat another Democratic challenger in the state's June 11th primary, Mac DeFord. DeFord's office is just blocks away on Church Street.
We need more people that are public servants serving in Washington. We don't need people that are looking to elevate themselves for, you know, private gain.
The 35-year-old says he has served the public as a Coast Guard veteran and as an attorney for local government. Like Moore, DeFord takes issue with Mace and says the Lowcountry deserves better.
You should want somebody who's going to represent you with integrity, somebody who's going to be professional, who's not going to, you know, use a slew of profanities.
DeFord says he wants to serve to tackle issues like gun violence, extreme weather, affordable housing, and aging infrastructure. He says he has experience as a legal advisor who has drafted ordinances.
When we talk about affordable housing or infrastructure projects, when you get to Congress, they're not going to give you a manual that tells you everything you need to know. You have to know how these things work.
And DeFord says he supports a woman's right to an abortion. His grandmother, Adele, had 8 kids when she learned she was pregnant and the family could not afford it. This was before Roe v. Wade.
And so Adele didn't have the opportunity to go seek a safe and legal procedure. So that drove her to a backroom procedure.
DeFord says his grandmother died from complications following that abortion. Both DeFord and Moore believe they can beat Mace and flip the seat. But both must battle a redrawn district map federal judges have ruled unconstitutional because it exiles 30,000 black voters. The U.S. Supreme Court heard arguments 7 months ago, but has yet to weigh in.
Thanks, Victoria. And now for a follow-up to that SC04 Republican primary forum with Congressman William Timmons and State Representative Adam Morgan. Timmons is up with a new ad calling out Morgan over voting to imprison women who get an abortion. This uses some audio from that floor debate back in August 2022, and you'll also hear State Rep. Josiah Magnuson in this ad, and of course Adam Morgan from that forum on Monday. Take a listen.
State Rep. Adam Morgan voted to put women who are victims of rape and incest in jail, and then lied about it to the Greenville Republican Women's Club.
I think that's actually completely inaccurate. I believe that was a tabling motion. My record is crystal clear on this issue. But no, I've never voted for giving women criminal prosecution.
Adam Morgan lied. He even called for the vote on the amendment that would put women in jail who tragically choose to end their pregnancy. Here's the truth. Let's roll the tape.
What my amendment does is, let's see. An abortion that is, if a pregnant woman has an abortion, again, going back to paralleling the pre-Roe law, she would be guilty of a misdemeanor and subject to up to 2 years in prison. I believe we need to pass this amendment. And I thank you for your time, and I would ask for a roll call vote.
Question is adoption amendment 13. Adoption Amendment 13, Mr. Magnuson requests roll call. Mr. King seconds, the 9-member second.
But no, I've never voted for giving women criminal prosecution.
Adam Morgan voted to put women who are victims of rape or incest in prison for ending their pregnancy, even in their first week of pregnancy. And then Adam lied about it to the public.
So again, we're not really in the business of playing everyone's campaign ads, but I thought this was a good tie-in because we heard that forum on Monday. There's a lot of back and forth, and this is one of the more contentious issues facing that race. And, oh, look, we have something else. Myon Schechter has this feature on one of the state's longest-serving journalists, John Monk, at the state newspaper. Monk is an institution covering the biggest legal stories in the state for decades. Take a listen.
John Monk. John Monk, state paper.
Veteran South Carolina courts reporter John Monk is used to asking questions of politicians, CEOs, judges, even the FBI. But today, University of South Carolina journalism students have questions for him.
How do you, as a journalist, deal with seeing these people hurting and talking about a very, like, vulnerable moment? How do you, like, personally get through that, too?
With 51 years of newspaper experience that's included buyouts and layoffs, business changes and burnout, Monk is used to answering the how and the why.
I really like what I'm doing. It's mentally challenging. I've got a purpose. I believe in shining the light. I believe every story I do or any journalist does makes democracy stronger.
At 77 years old, Monk is a bit of an anomaly in an industry that shed many of its older reporters as it aims to evolve for its own survival. Monk has seen that evolution from his first paper in Georgetown to his current job at the state paper in Columbia. There are no more typewriters, deadlines are earlier, Twitter or X is a thing. The newsroom is smaller and it's much younger. But like the news, Monk hasn't stopped.
My mind is still good. My body is sort of still good. And I assume that if it weren't the newspaper business being what it is, I would quickly be shown the nearest door if I wasn't up to snuff. So, and I'm still doing stories I really like to do and I think are important.
The place you can find Monk most often is the courtroom. There he sits, unassuming, with his white hair, glasses, always a shirt and tie, and a signature line of pens in his shirt breast pocket. In a small state, Monk is known by the judges, lawyers, and security, sometimes even the defendants.
Not every reporter likes to cover court dramas, but I kind of love to do it.
Monk didn't plan to be a reporter. After college, he was drafted and enlisted in the Army, where he was a medic and jumped out of airplanes. Post-service, he hitchhiked around Europe and was once shipwrecked in the Bahamas.
I know that sounds a little bit a tall tale story, but it's not.
He found himself at a small Lowcountry newspaper. It would fold 6 months later, but by then, Monk was sold on the profession.
I've done a story on a nudist camp and had to wear what they did. I've jumped out of an airplane with a golden knight at 10,000 feet. I talked my way into being on the first airplane in the invasion of Panama by the U.S. Army.
Monk's covered a statehouse corruption probe, the executives charged in a nuclear plant scandal, the South Carolinians indicted in the U.S. Capitol riot, and the trial of convicted murderer Alec Murdoch. That's just in the last decade. It's a fraction of a reporting career that's included notorious serial killer Pee Wee Gaskins and a years-long investigation resulting in the downfall of a popular ex-USC president.
I could have been a rock and roll singer. I would have done that. Or like a professional athlete. But all the things that journalism just engages me in things I have aptitudes for that no other profession would do.
I asked Monk how much longer he has it in him to stick around what can be an unforgiving job. He still takes constant phone calls and chases down sources. He still breaks news. In his office, Monk rifles through past journalism awards, usually reserved for a storage room.
Photo of you right there.
Do I look young in that? I don't think I've changed a bit.
Maybe one day he'll retire. For now, he says he's having too much fun.
You can find that story and more at southcarolinapublicradio.org. Welcome to the wind down section, our little break from the news. We're glad you're here. A.T. Shire, producer of the lead podcast, and proud papa is here with us. We're in the same studio right now, A.T.
Yes, I apologize to everyone if you did hear me snickering in the background.
He was making noises.
I'm not quiet during these, but normally we're partitioned off, Gavin and I. So I really am sorry for all the angst and consternation that I've created.
Usually I just get to hear it in my ear and I have to keep it together while he's making a little quiet asides.
Asides. Some would say. Anyway, Gavin, We do have a call. Okay, we're going to get back to calls. This isn't all about me being a papa. Rena's good, though. Caitlin is good, though. Very good.
Yeah.
So are you ready for this call, Gavin?
Yeah, let's roll the tape.
Hey, Gavin and AT, this is David from Columbia. I just wanted to let you know that I also work for the state and also received a fax from Clairvoyant Pearl. We had much consternation in my office about where it came from. And then one of my coworkers pointed out that perhaps she isn't that good at her job because obviously the state was not going to take her up on her offer, and maybe she should have sent it to a better fax number. But I wanted you to know that you are not alone in receiving faxes about your various spiritual needs. Hope y'all are doing well. Bye.
David, thanks for calling, and we love hearing from another state employee anytime, but also one who has received a fax from Pearl the Psychic. I think that just goes to show, David, you can probably back us up here, that as a state employee, we have received so much cybersecurity training that Pearl has been blocked by our spam filters, and now she's looking for any other way to spiritually influence us, and that is via fax machine.
I might be on the other side there.
Stop it.
And say, like, maybe these are very targeted, and she something is going to happen to us, you know? Like, she might know something.
So she's been rejected so much that she's trying any which way, besides calling our voicemail box, 8356769.
I know you're listening, Pearl.
To reach us to tell us about impending doom, impending prosperity.
In impending something. There's a
weight.
Yes, a pox on us, you know? There's something looming for sure. Thank you, David, for calling about Pearl. But speaking of Pearl, let's pivot to your pearly whites, Gavin.
Oh, okay? I thought we were talking about your little baby Pearl. But yeah, we can talk about my pearly whites.
Gavin's
my chompers.
He's got a lot of babies in his teeth.
What you're saying is I have a lot of baby teeth.
Yes,
Gavin never got baby teeth. Full set of baby teeth.
Yeah. A lot of space.
It's how I sound the way I sound, yeah. Which is a lot of people are,
why your
are jealous of.
Your diction's so good. Anyway, Gavin, your teeth.
My diction.
Your teeth.
Everyone exclaims about my diction.
Yes.
My teeth, as you can hear, my voice has changed.
Yes.
I've been going through some changes. But back in the day, I want to say back when I was 21, I had the unfortunate incident of chipping my tooth, my front tooth, my big buck teeth.
How'd you do it?
Well, a friend of mine, she happened to jump on my back at the time. We were walking down
classic
the street.
Story.
There might have been some sort of inebriation involved.
No lubrication
of sorts. No one can say. But I caught her because I'm such a strong man.
Yeah, of course.
And then
great.
To show off because I'm such a, you know, strong man.
Strapping.
I had to buck back like, you know, I got you. And then, of course, like Humpty Dumpty, we all fell down and I cracked my little
the
front
classic
tooth.
Story. Truth. True story.
Just chipped. And it wasn't anything bad. If you ever chip your tooth, it's jarring. It has a weird sensation. But that's gone away for years now. But I do not like the dentist, okay? I do not like people touching my teeth, especially because my brother Nick, who's listening, traumatized us as children because we were riding our bikes in a parking garage in my dad's office, just doing our thing, doing separated dad parenting things, okay? The boys go ride their bikes, whatever. Mm-hmm. No one's in the parking garage. There are no cars. There are, however, cement pillars.
Yeah.
To which Nick.
Classic garage.
To which Nick apparently was drawn to.
Beeline.
To the factory. I didn't see it. Thank God I didn't see it. But like he hit that thing face first and his teeth got. Oh.
I can't wait for something like this with Rena.
Oh my gosh. So we had to like get him that off, his teeth fixed. But. And they would be fixed for a couple years.
They always break again.
And then you go on to the beach, you go to the OBX, and we're eating pizza crust. Right. I love pizza. And then Nick chomps in, there goes his teeth.
Tooth.
Again,
tooth,
trauma. Yeah. So I'm like, so that's all in my mind. I'm like, also, Little Shop of Horrors really messed me up. But my dentist is Dr. Karen Park here in Lexington. And
great
she
friend
is
of the pod.
Great friend of the pod. Mom of our great friend, Kay Park. She does great work. She's been harping on me. Can I fix that chip? Mm-hmm. And it has been getting a little bit bigger. I was like, okay. And I looked at it the other day when I got to clean it. I was like, fine, Karen. I was like, God. So I said, Karen, your birthday's coming. She's turning 60. She does not look 60. If
let
you know
me tell
Karen,
you, folks.
Buck, you know?
Let me tell you, folks.
And so I said, here's a little birthday present for you, Karen. You can fix my tooth.
What a present. You're allowing her to fix it.
She gave it to me for free, pretty much.
Pro bono.
So, yeah.
It's pro bono
but,
work.
She, you know, and I didn't want to do it because, I'm like, what do they do? So they shoot up your tooth. And honestly, that was the only thing that was going to be like the quote-unquote scariest part
for me.
Did
you smell your tooth?
Yeah, that was weird.
Don't like that.
But I will say that just getting the Novocaine, not as bad as getting Botox. You know, when they shot me up, they're like, do you want me to hold your hand? I'm like, yes, please.
Yes.
I'd like the comfort.
Oh.
And she has some great people that work with her. And so when they're doing that, it's just like a little pinch. And if you've ever gotten Botox, which I've only read about, I'm going to correct myself. I've only read about it. It's like, you know, quick pinch, but, and then I got some laser work done and that hurts a little bit more too. But yeah, so once the whole tooth gets numb, I mean, no big deal. They're just sanding it down. And then
hate the idea of that.
The dust and the smell. And then at the end, I'm like, mirror, mirror,
what did you do to me?
And I was like, I felt bored again. I felt beautiful again.
Yeah.
For the first time in a long time, I felt beautiful.
I gotta say, I find the beauty in the imperfections, Gavin.
I love that too. I agree. Perfection's completely overrated.
Yeah, straight teeth. Too many people have two straight teeth right now.
I don't
if
like.
Your teeth are perfectly, perfectly, perfectly straight.
Stop listening to this podcast.
And too white. Mm. Can we talk about two white teeth? Yeah. We don't have to do it right now, but there is a level of the teeth being too white. Okay?
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
I'm against it. It doesn't look real. It's weird.
I got strong enamel. Been blessed with that. Mm-hmm. So. They're white enough for me, like, you know, unless you let them go. I drink coffee, but I don't like
Do you brush your teeth?
Yeah, and I floss, got the flossers.
Then we're good.
I know.
Then we're good.
You know,
okay, we don't need these to be laser whites, like you got to wear sunglasses to look at someone's teeth.
And I'm on TV, and I'm still like, let's not, just keep them at a baseline.
Just look like a normal person, please.
You know, embrace
your imperfections.
Yes.
It's what makes you you.
Yes.
Okay, Rena, she's going to have snaggle teeth, okay?
Oh, yeah?
I'm calling it
Is that where it comes from?
I hope not. I mean, I had straight teeth. I barely had braces, and I've never had a cavity brag. Okay,
okay, we got
Karen
the good
Park,
genes.
You're not getting your hands on this guy. Okay,
Karen, I tried. Karen, I tried.
Anyway, say goodbye, Gavin. Have a good weekend.
Tell
May the Fourth be with you.
May the Fourth
I'm
be
so
with
happy
you.
My child wasn't born on
Thank
this stupid
you.
Day. Okay, there we go.
Tell us about your teeth. Tell us about cybersecurity issues that you have concerns about, or maybe if you're Pearl the Psychic, give us a shout. David, thank you for calling us. We appreciate that. 803-563-7169. Give us some parental advice for our proud papa and baby Rena. She's so sweet. Such a sweet little pea pod. And of course, thank you for listening to the pod. Show us your appreciation by also leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts. We like that too. And you can stay up to date with the latest news on SCETV.org and SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org. And don't forget to support your local newspapers. For the South Carolina lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina. Well, you don't judge. You're such a good person. You don't notice those things. You don't judge people.
Okay. Go
I have a lot of critiques on your face that I've never told you.
Interesting.
Well,